Hello, 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 and welcome back to The Fowler Hour. Today I am joined by Ben Mottershead, who is, well, a really, really cool dude, firstly. We're going to just leave that out there. We just had a great conversation. I've started to record all of these intros now at the end of the podcast, so my brain is already filled with all the things that we spoke about and all the amazing conversation that we've just had. So Ben is a designer, he's a strategist, he works in branding and social. He's one of the co-founders for a community-centric collective called Uprising, which we'll hear more about in the show. And on today's show, we spend a lot of time talking about the importance of community, whether that is your client's community, whether that's your own design creative community, and what it takes to be part of that, what it takes to be running your own community, to help others with their community, and also seeing where the gaps are and problems are with communities and building your own to solve those problems, which Ben is doing with his team members at Uprising. So we talk about the importance of community. We talk about their weekly design briefs, which I think you guys should all go and sign up for. But overall, I was really pumped after this conversation. We were only meant to be talking for about 30 minutes, but we actually ended up running to the full hour mark today. And I think it was a really insightful conversation with Ben. And I really would suggest all of you go and get involved with an online community or a local meetup, because as more and more people work remotely, these types of networking, this type of community, this type of conversation is even more important. So let's get started with today's show with Ben. And yeah, I think you guys are really going to enjoy this episode. Welcome back to the Fowler Hour. Today I'm joined by Ben Mottershead, and we met kind of at around Glug or something like that. So I've got Ben on the show today to talk about design community, the importance of getting involved with different points of activism as things like that as well. There was all the climate protests recently, which we'll dive into. But Ben, how are we doing today?
Very well. Kind of tired from yesterday. A lot of running around. We also, as usual, tie in a team meeting whenever possible at Glug. So as soon as the protests were done, we kind of went straight into a team meeting to do like a wrap up of all the PR that was generated, et cetera, et cetera. But other than that, really good dude, having a great time.
Good. Yeah, so for people who may not know who Ben is, Ben and I met kind of online and at a design event called Glug. We met online through a Facebook group called the Designers League. And Ben is a designer and strategist and works in branding and social and things like that. But Ben, you're going to be able to explain it a lot better than I do. So what do you do and why do you do what you do?
Oh, that's a deep question. I worked in as a designer within agencies around London for over half a decade. I then decided to make the transition into freelance life, and since then have been working with, you know, in-house companies and teams, still within London, but also with remote clients. And over the last, I'd say, year, I've really kind of started to transition myself more into the realms of strategy itself. I feel like obviously every designer and creative is a strategic thinker in their own right. But I've become quite heavily invested and intrigued by the actual art that is strategy, brand strategy and content strategy. So currently I'm doing that. I'm working 3 days a week with Glug as their content strategist, and strangely enough, doing a lot of copywriting, which is exciting because it's not something I've really ever done before, which I made them aware of before they took me on. But I feel the exposure to writing has actually really managed to help my design efforts because of the sort of how it basically has to improve your communication skills. Design is fundamentally not only about problem solving, but about delivering clear communication. And I think the written word is kind of understated in that sense. I don't know a lot of creators that do actively write regularly. And even in the time I've been doing it, I've noticed a drastic improvement in how I communicate my ideas to clients and with myself and my own sort of personal marketing. In terms of who I work with, it could be a range of people from Nike to Vice UK has been one of my recent people I've worked with. I also have remote clients, which can be a mix of, like I said, primarily within branding, but because I spent my years as developing different touchpoint skills from like digital to motion, animation, etc. The way I sort of you I guess, attacker branding project is very multifaceted. It's very much looking at how these various touch points can come together to deliver a really solid message. So I still firmly, like, even though I'm trying to move more towards strategy, I still firmly try and use my multidisciplinary skills, but much more in a kind of niche, staying up my lane kind of way now.
Yeah. But that makes sense, because what you've done is you're taking the skills you've learned and you're narrowing them down and you're refining the ones that you've really enjoyed. And you say you're taking on that copywriting role, and I completely agree with you that more designers and creatives in general need to write. Like, I try and write every single day for like 20 minutes. And when you've been able to do that consistently, you can actually build up a skill that helps you talk to other clients, helps you talk to people you're not used to talking to more easily. You can bounce ideas off people. You can actually define what you're thinking in a much clearer format.
Exactly. And I think it also comes back to, even from a personal level, of if you have your own website and you're trying to do a showcase of a study, a lot of that comes down to how that is communicated via the text you include in that. And I feel when you go to a lot of sites, and I was guilty of this as well for a long time, it's very easy to just put nice visuals on a page. But unless you're really able to articulate the story behind that process, it's not going to be an easy sell as if you can do that. So I think since I've started to work at Glug for this few days a week, I've really become a bit of an advocate for improving people's writing skills, and to actually try and get people actively involved in either developing their own blog, writing articles on LinkedIn, or even just doing more in-depth writing on actually Instagram posts and that kind of area. So it's a really interesting time for me. I spent a lot of years in the industry kind of faffing around, trying to be like a jack of all trades, realizing eventually that I was actually competing with the entire creative landscape by trying to sell myself as an animator and a print designer and all these different elements. So over the last, last year or so, I've really tried to start to, like I said, around the time I started to get really interested in strategy, I've really tried to pivot myself to be a lot more niche in my focus and sort of market and position myself in that way. Which has actually been going really well and a lot more effectively. I'm just about to launch a whole new content strategy for myself, because I really tanked off in that area. I haven't really invested much time into platforms like Instagram, etc. lately, but that's all going to change. So that's currently what I'm doing at the moment. It's kind of a flavor of what I'm about. Just kind of interesting.
But I do love hearing that conversation. I do love sitting down and being able to say, okay, well, you've spent, say, more than half a decade working in and around trying to figure out what you really enjoy in an agency environment, and now you're picking things up that you're loving, and you're spending more time doing those things that you're enjoying.
I think it does come back to the idea of that sort of the most effective change starts with yourself, and it's about recognizing a problem that was there. And while I love my time in agencies, it was really detrimental. Is that the word? It was really basically, it was quite harmful to my mental health. I actually burnt out and quit my last job I was in, because I was so stressed out. I was so burnt out. I had no love left for design. And I think I speak out this the other day about how I think people misconstrue what being burning out is, and they just see it as like almost you run out of energy. But for me, it was quintessentially, I was losing the love for design. I got to a point where I didn't actually want to do a design role anymore, because I was so my mental health was so bad. I was so sort of depressed about my job. So I sort of noticed that, decided I was going to leave that job and focus purely on myself as a freelance and independent creative and independent designer. And by doing that, it kind of broke the shackles, so to speak, because instead of expecting someone else to make decisions for me, I could finally take ownership and autonomy of my own life and be who I wanted to be as a creative. So it's been, like I said, it's really, really interesting. Even the last 6 months alone has been really interesting. And I know for yourself, being a sort of independent designer and creative, that you'd probably agree that I thought everyone should at least try it once within their sort of careers, because I think it really does open your eyes to a lot of your own skill bases, your own interests, what you actually enjoy. And it really helps define you more as a creative from your own point of view.
Yeah. And when you don't have someone else's motivations behind you, or someone else's goals and clients and briefs, you actually have to sit down and figure it all out yourself. You can't just be given, obviously, when you work in an agency, as I'm sure you found, that you can have a certain set of tasks and you go through your day and you do that, and it might stress you out a bit. You might have a really great time. But when you're working for yourself, you have to not just manage the brief you're working, but you also have to manage, you say, your mental health. You have to realize what is good for you and what isn't good for you. You have to realize that you can, although you've been working 9 to 5 for the last 6 years, it might actually be better for you to get up later and work later. And it's all those little niches and all those little niches, those little nuances that people don't, I don't think they see it when they work in house. That's what I've found with people who I've spoken to about it anyway.
Yeah, I think there's that thing. It's like you have to really develop a multifaceted skill that isn't just within the creative realms when you sort of go work for yourself. Like you said, you have to not only kind of make sure you're taking the time and the holiday for your own sort of well-being, but you're also then having to look at your accounts, you're having to look at your marketing, you're having to look at how you, like your, you know, client meetings, doing like presentations, etc., etc. Stuff that would be very much client-facing jobs are in the design sector. Mm-hmm. I think the one benefit you do have though by going as being a freelance independent artist is actually, or design, sorry, is that you can actually charge a better rate often. I think there's a massive issue within the creative industries where staff are very low paid for the amount of hours they put in.
It wasn't uncommon
for me when I was working design agencies to be working till 2 a.m. from 8 in the morning, routinely, but only being paid. But only being paid a salary which was about in the low 20,000s.
Yeah,
so I was like 21,000, 22,000. And when you're a junior or whatever, you don't feel like you have a lot of say or autonomy over yourself. So I think that's the thing. The only reason I kind of, this next year of my life, I'm really focusing more on myself from a mental well-being perspective. I'm not too worried about chasing money at the moment. Obviously, I've got regular work coming in thanks to this sort of permanence position with Global Events, which is really nice to start your career off with that. And I'm also doing a lot of other little bits of work alongside that. But this next year for me isn't really about generating revenue. It's more about just sort of working out who I am as a creative, taking some time back after like working within agencies. And then I'll start to look at how I can really bring in and optimize on like monetization and revenue itself.
Yeah. And speaking of doing things for your own well-being and starting your own little projects and doing your own little bits of design, you recently announced your new community and your new design collective, Uprising.
Yes.
So,
which is,
what's that all about?
So obviously we met through Designers League, which is, anyone who isn't aware of Designers League is, it is a global creative community, which is where you can go to receive feedback on your work, to network, to meet other creatives in your area in a non kind of pop-up ad sort of way. But we met through that, and I obviously spent about 4 to 5 years helping to run that. When I first joined, it was on about 1,000 members. I think it's now approaching 19,000 members. And we kind of grew that as a collective of, you know, the team itself was between, it always fluctuated between about 5 to 8 of us, and we kind of ran that together. And then it got to a point where I think we all just felt it was TDL in its own right, was just heading in a direction we didn't really want to go in. It was, we wanted to be a bit more product focused and a bit more kind of entrepreneurial. So the team decided to disband, and the founder of Designers League, Tom, remained with the community, and he's continuing to run that. And myself, Jack, Megan, Henrik decided to start Uprising. Now, Uprising is essentially, I'd probably say it's a creative collective, but it's a firmly a product centric. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we're good.
So Uprising is essentially a product centric and facing collective, and the idea of Uprising was to actually look at the creative landscape and the culture of that landscape, and start to actually pinpoint the sort of little grey areas within the industry where things are either maybe not doing the creative community justice, or there's a gap in the market to really deliver something new and exciting. We currently have two products, which is, one is Weekly Design, which is a weekly design brief platform. Obviously, the premise of that is anything new. You have loads of sites like that, sort of like Briefbox. You have Daily UI, 30 Days of Logo, I think it's called. Is that what it's called? You might be aware.
Yeah, it's like 30 logos, 30 days, something like that.
30 logos, something like that. And, it's not like, the thing is, it's not an idea that hasn't been done before, but I think one of the best things about launching a successful product is just recognizing where the shortcomings are in those products. And what we realized was, while these products and platforms aren't necessarily bad, they're quite shallow in the depth of content they deliver. So if you're actually trying to generate a portfolio, or you're trying to practice properly, those sites do not represent an industry setting. They don't represent things like sort of key personas within your target audience. There are competitor research or multifaceted outputs, such as like if you have multiple deliverables, what do they consist of? If it's a UI project or a product design project, it's more deep than just going, oh, you have to go design a landing page for a sunglasses brand. And after doing some research, we realized there wasn't a lot of depth to the briefs that you were given. And as a result, it was just going, if you took part in those, you, although it's good for practice, you were going to end up swamping the industry with just more kind of surface value work rather than work that actually maybe has good strategy to it or good thought process. So the difference with our briefs is we actually put a lot of effort and time into actually generating the briefs in a way which has the depth to it. So you could do one brief a week if you, well, probably not one brief a week, because I'd probably recommend spending a little bit more time on it than that. But if you did want to spend one brief a week, you'd actually end up with a portfolio at the end which was tangible and had a really, really in-depth thought process to it, strategic thinking. It would make you consider new skill bases, such as learning how to mood board, learning how to generate effective color schemes, and so on. So that's weekly design. And then we do have another product at the moment, which is live, called Jobs for Designers. Well, I say it's live. We're actually just about to pull it out, because Jobs for Designers, as the title states, is a creative jobs board. Again, nothing new. And I think what that actually product start was started to be generated when we were all still at Designers League. And that came off the back of the fact we had a big outcry at all times from members that they wanted a better place to be able to find decent job roles. So we launched that, and then we kind of then put it out to kind of beta testing and actually getting feedback from people. And the fundamental feedback we got was that it wasn't anything interesting about it. There was nothing new. There's already sort of, you've got if you could, which is, it's nice, that's jobs boards. You've got design jobs board. So we're basically going to pull that for a few months and actually really start to consider the cultural aspects of the industry, not just, oh, this is a job that is offering you 20,000, et cetera. We're going to approach it a lot more potentially from a cultural standpoint of what is the work culture of the studios that are maybe listing? What is actually the cultural benefit of the place you might go work for? What are things like, how are things like mental wellbeing, mental health, flexible hours, remote working considered? All things that are actually, especially a millennial audience today, are really striving for. The idea of kind of satellite offices or remote working, flexi hours, or really unlimited holiday, are all things that are proven to actually create a more productive workforce. So we kind of want to look at generating a setting which focuses very heavily on that sort of culture within the industry, instead of just going, oh, you need to be able to do this sort of skill base and have this sort of salary, which is still important, but I think is a trick being missed by a lot of job sites who aren't maybe looking at those areas.
Yeah, and with job boards, something I've noticed, especially a lot of talk on Twitter, is the amount of kind of crap that gets put on job postings, and just keywords to get hits on SEO and get to the front page of these job boards, being like, we're part of a rocket fuel team and you need to be it's like all these words that are just going to grab your attention all the time but have no substance behind them.
It's incredibly superficial, and I think the problem we've really got on it, we really do have a systemic problem in the industry more about being able to articulate and write effective job listings. I think it's not, as a creative, I mean, you'll know just as well as I do that some of the job listings you can come across which are saying, oh, we want a junior designer that we're going to offer 18,000 to 20,000 for, but by the way, you also need to understand branding, animation, video editing, coding, develop that, all these different things, which is just insane. I mean, I'm going into 6-7 years as a perfect, since leaving university as a professional creative, and I don't have all those skills, and I worked very hard within agencies for quite a long time. So to me, the idea that when I see a job listing like that, all that says to me is the company does not know what they want. And it's incredibly off-putting for a young designer, because if they think that's the benchmark for what you need to know to get in there, it can be very disheartening. And also, it's not a good representation of the company. Would you really want to go work for a company that's only going to pay a creative that amount to have that sort of skill base? So I definitely think, like I said, we're still kind of, we're focusing on weekly design at the moment and trying to grow that audience. And then with Jobs for Designers, we're going to sort of come back to it, I guess, in the fourth quarter of this year. And really, after we've sort of spent a bit of soul searching and actually looked at what we can do, which might be more beneficial for both agency or in-house team and the actual creatives they're trying to, trying to hire.
Yeah, and I just wanted to make a point for the people listening at home. I've got one of the briefs up in front of me from Weekly Design, and Ben's not kidding. You guys put a lot of time and effort into creating and crafting these briefs. The email they come in is beautifully clean. There's no fluff. There's no rubbish in here. It's just, but there is detail. So it's giving you an overview. It's giving you customer demographics. You're getting specific requests from that particular client. You've got specific information that has to be included, including information for a business card, the deliverables. And you've even taken the time to suggest some of the processes to get there, which when you look at other briefs, it's things like the logo design one, for example. It just gives you a very rough idea and a rough direction. It doesn't suggest, oh, maybe if you're going to produce these deliverables, here's a way of getting to those deliverables. It just says, yeah, this is what we need, do it, which is fine, but it doesn't help people craft a process in any capacity.
And I think it's the thing, I know within your own practice, you're very sort of firm on the fact that design is a process of problem solving, and it's a process of actually positioning and understanding the actual client's needs. And if you don't understand the client's needs, you can't hope to solve their problems. And I think the problem we've kind of gotten, I mean, I kind of refer to it as the dribble whirlpool of this idea that if you don't have that kind of, if you don't have that kind of in-depth idea to the problems that are being, that the client is facing, it all becomes a very aesthetically driven process. And it's not surprising that a lot of like UI design on Dribbble all has a very similar feel to it at times, because people post them up and then people go to it for inspiration and then, you know, mimic the transitions that are being used, mimic the actual style of the design. So I think what we wanted to really do is kind of be almost a backlash to that, to something that I think is actually a fundamental issue in design. I don't really want to be part of an industry that eventually has a whole generation of designers coming through it, which maybe aren't the best problem solvers, because that's detrimental to actually the design process. So, and it's interesting you mentioned about the idea of it being quite straight talking, because that is actually part of Uprising's whole brand language. It's this kind of no fluff, just straight to the point, get it across as quickly and fast as you can to help people. I'm sure Jack would be really happy to hear that you actually like the stylization of it, because that's his domain. And then as for the processes you mentioned as well, the reason we've actually got those currently, but they aren't linked, is we are currently developing our site, and we're developing an evergreen section of our site, which will host individual articles about these various processes. So if you get set the brief, you'll then have a link out to a mood board section, which is actually how to generate effective mood boards, or how to actually like understand color palettes and how to generate color palettes, whether it's monochromatic or tertiary or second, et cetera, et cetera. So we're currently working quite hard to generate that evergreen content, but we have to develop the site at the same time. And because we all work full time, it's either freelancers or designers. It's just, you know, it's just a process in itself.
Yeah. But at the same time, you're seeing a space in not just the market for product focus, but also within the community, and that you weren't being served and couldn't find what you wanted. So you've made it instead.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It always has to come back to community. I mean, my entire life since I've left uni has been Designers League, incredibly community orientated. I've since then gone to Glug Events, which is a global creative and experiential events company, which is entirely about community and bringing communities together and expanding on those communities. I mean, I effectively got the job with Glug because they saw what I did with Designers League, and they really liked how I sort of talked to people and did all that kind of stuff. So, and now we're doing Uprising. My entire sort of career in terms of side projects and passion projects has been incredibly community focused. And as a result, community for me, I can't speak for obviously all the other the co-founders of Weekly Design Uprising, but for me, community is fundamentally the core aspect of how all great design is delivered. How does it help the community? If you're talking to a client, they have communities in their own right. Their audiences are like essentially potential communities that they can bring on through brand value or brand loyalty. And therefore, as a designer, you're trying to best serve their community. You're not doing what the client wants you to do. You're doing what's in the best interest often for their community and their audience. So yeah, community has always been a huge thing for me. And I think it's something I have quite a lot of experience in. As I've been doing it for sort of like 5 to 7 years now, building these communities and kind of working with people. So it's a really exciting time, and I think we're all very. It's been quite, like I said, it's been difficult because we've all got so much like stuff going on with our own careers. So it's obviously just trying to allocate the time effectively. But we're really excited to see where it could go, and because it is, we're trying to develop products which we see as a direct result of what we see happening within the creative industries and the creative communities. It means we can be quite reactive, and because we're a small team still, it means we can actually see a problem and then discuss how we could solve that problem through the use of products, etc.
So how important do you think it is for, obviously you've mentioned that clients have an audience, have their own communities, etc., and looking out towards who you're working with is a very important skill, but how important do you think being part of or having a community is for creatives, like with other creatives? So rather than like a client focusing direction, maybe with like TDL or with Uprising, what do you think the benefits are of being part of that kind of community?
So I think if you look at it from a sort of maybe a strategic standpoint, or just I think if your creatives can better understand the zeitgeist of what's happening in the creative world and et cetera, they can actually become more informed creatives themselves. And with knowledge comes power, so to speak, as the old saying goes. So the more knowledge you ingest, the more sort of confident you can be about speak within that domain, and then the better work you can put out there. So I think even if you take out all the client side of it and you just want to focus purely from the creative standpoint, I think engaging and building these communities is not only incredibly invaluable to the founder and the people who run those communities, that actually learn a lot about, you know, social dynamics and problem solving and understanding what people's needs are, etc. But from actually just an attendee or like a member of those communities, they can actually interact with people they may never get the chance to outside of their own sort of social groups. They could, I mean, with TDL, it wasn't uncommon to have people from, you know, it could be Slough in England speaking to a designer over in Vermont or in New York or in Australia or Sydney, etc. And I think the clearer you can make that, I guess the clearer you can actually start to envision the creative industries around the world, the better you can start to understand how to design as an individual and how you can actually create original or design that has originality to it and has a unique sort of voice and a position to it. So I think it's like, I really liked being actually running the Designers League because it allowed me to improve heavily as a creative, because I just became more aware of what was happening around the world, what was happening within like the like localized zeitgeist of the industry, but also what's happening in all the little pockets all over the globe. And by becoming more informed, it allowed me to have a better understanding of what design actually is on a global scale.
And I think, do you think people are missing that? Because obviously as more people work remotely, as more people work in a freelance setting, there is a lot of talk about that being a very lonely way to work. Although there are benefits to working remotely for an agency or working as your full-time job remotely, having control over your own schedule, this type of stuff, there are some pretty heavy downsides to it if you don't know what you're doing and if you're new to working remotely. So do you think community helps in that regard as well? Because many people are probably missing out on all these opportunities by working for themselves.
I think because community allows for conversation. I think conversation is the fundamental thing that is actually the crux to the solution. Like you said, it can be very lonely working as an independent creative or freelancer, and creating communities or joining communities where you can actually converse with people, not in the sense of like what you have at face value on platforms like Instagram, where people kind of post and you like, and you might do a few comments. I know there's like people who actually do, and you're probably one of them, actually do direct message people quite heavily, etc. But the issue we've got is kind of this culture now where all kind of human contact is superficial and it doesn't really exist past a certain point. There's a great book from Sherry Turkle called Alone Together, which is basically about that kind of like, you know, the social media technology age, about how we're actually, we think we're part of something greater, but a lot of time we're just on our mobile phones on the tube. And I think that comes fundamentally down to a lack of being able to converse with people on a one-to-one basis or feeling like you're part of a group in a more deeper way. So I definitely think communities, creative communities, whether it be through Facebook or whether it be through different platforms, can help, because while they are still rooted in social media, they allow for a much deeper connection with the people you're just talking to. Because like we found from Designers League, what we hope to actually achieve from like, you know, Uprising itself is that people meet, but then they can go off and actually like meet up in person, and they can actually go and have like direct message conversations. They actually learn about each other. They can become friends. So I think creative communities are really great. And it's no surprise that a lot of brands now are jumping on Facebook to actually utilize their group features. I mean, Peloton Bikes, for instance, has like a 60,000 or 60,000 to 80,000 member group now, which they actually fundamentally utilize to get feedback from their community, to actually like release products, to actually give discounts, to get people talking to each other, to like schedule like group rides. Rafa, another cycle brand, which are also doing that. So it's the definite, I think it'd be illogical to say it's not a valuable thing to try and become involved in or start yourself, because at the very essence of what the world is, community is always the bedrock to that. Different communities working together to about things they love.
So the way you're describing it, it sounds like this is a bit of a learning curve for the remote working industry, or sector, so to speak, because this has not really been a thing before, because we've never had the ability to transmit information in this way, so across the internet and so quickly, that this is kind of like a learning curve that people are needing to realize, oh, actually, shit, like my mental health is tanking because I'm loving my job, but I am alone in a room or in an office for 6 or 7 days a week, working on my own thing. And until the recent times of Facebook groups, of meetup, of Eventbrite, of Glug events, I think people just didn't realize that that's what they needed, maybe.
Well, I think that's the thing. I mean, if you look at, it's just been over a decade since groups was actually a functionality on something like Facebook. I think it launched in 2004, but then the actual groups feature didn't actually come in till, I think, 2007, 2008, or something like that. So it's a whole new experience. But I think if you aren't an independent designer or freelancer, these kind of groups are like, you know, these sort of creative groups that you can find on platforms like Facebook are really invaluable, because it would allow you then to connect with other creatives in your area. And then for all you know, you may come across someone who's got a desk. They might have like a 2-person studio space and they need someone to come on. And to see if someone wants to come utilize that space. And I think fundamentally, it's a really great way to meet people, network, and make yourself feel that you're part of something larger than just, like you said, being at a single desk day in, day out by yourself, which, isn't like you pointed out earlier, is incredibly damaging to someone's mental health if you do it for prolonged periods of time. Like I said, a community obviously is like, it can be on a micro level or a macro level. You can have small communities, you can have large communities. I mean, you mentioned at the start that I was at the protest the other day, and that's a great example of the like sort of communities in their own right. I attended the protest with Glug Events, and we were joined by agencies such as Wieden and Kennedy. You had BBH there. You had, I think, Havas were there, like these big ad agencies. And for the month run up to the protest, we all ran our own individual campaigns and projects to sort of promote the cause. And then towards the day, when we got near towards the day, we all came together as a community in our own right to help do like deliver workshops, to bring these projects together and actually do something that for the greater good that actually engages with the public and to me, that's a great example of how you can take multiple little ideas and then bring them together with people who share that same passion and form a collective and a community out of it. And then you don't feel like you're just a single entity anymore. You feel like you're part of a much bigger thing, which is actually like a really nice feeling. I think everyone just goes through life hoping they can feel like they're part of something. And if that has to start on a digital level using something like Facebook groups, that then can expand into a macro level of being actually out in the physical world, that's just a great, great thing to be a part of.
Yeah, and especially when you can go to these types of events. So this was was there an official title for these protests, or was it a general climate?
It was a global climate strikes run by UKSCN and Fridays for Future. Yeah. So it was there wasn't necessarily an official title, but it was basically that.
Yeah. So, but when you went to these types, when you go to these types of events, you say you have a cause behind it, and that really can help motivate people to step out of their comfort zone to go and meet with other people from other agencies. Because when this is kind of a darker reflection on it, but when some of the biggest, most innovative times in a country's history or general society is when we're at war, because there's a massive cause, there's one solitary focus and everyone gets behind it. Now, I'm not saying like it's a similar idea that when you have one sole focus, when you have this idea of we want to make a difference, we want to protest this change, we want to get actively involved in making sure that our planet is here for in a healthy manner for the next 1,500 years, however long it's going to be. But when you have that single cause, everyone comes together and everyone is willing to put aside any differences and work as a community, which I'm sure afterwards, after yesterday's events, now people are going to be talking to each other more. Now there's going to be more networking between those agencies, between
Well, that's
other
exactly
creatives.
It. I mean, we found this just a glug. So we decided to run an open source protest data. Poster protest database. That was our campaign and what we ran with, which anyone could contribute to, anyone could download from, etc., etc., which people can find through the Glug website. But what we found was we launched that, and then a few weeks later, a few ad guys got in touch wanting to work together on something they were doing, which is similar, you know, it was things like placard workshop, etc., etc. And what ended up happening is they ran their placard workshop at the Tate. We then went and exhibited all the posters we'd actually had submitted at the Tate Modern. We then made contact with people from these huge ad agencies and like sort of enterprise, creative enterprise and so on and so forth. And obviously for Glug, who's actually an events company, it massively expanded our contact base and actually allowed us to really engage with big firms and big design groups, which although we may have had like, you know, we may have had introductions to before, we may know someone who knows someone, it really strengthened that relationship. Because like you just said, if you're all aware you're working on something for the common good and sort of a common goal, it means that when you come to talk to them again or reach out to say, oh, would you like to be a speaker? Would you like to become involved in a future event we run? It then allows for that kind of a familiarity of going, oh, I like you because you actually gave it down when the time came. So there's definitely that sort of positive, I guess it comes down to personal positive brand association. Either if you're individual and you go to these things and you meet the creative director of off top of, let's say, Wieland & Kennedy, who happens to be there with a placard, and you get talking, it means that when you go to email him in the future about, you know, did he have any projects or something like that, they'll be able to put a name to a face, but in a positive way. They'll associate your involvement with that as something for good. And therefore it doesn't take as much convincing to be like, oh, I'm actually like, you know, really decent at what I do, so etc.
I'm not just great at making placards.
Yeah, not just great at making placards. That's the thing. It's like positive. I mean, even like, because at the end of the day, what we did at Glug was we did it very selflessly. The reason we didn't just approach a load of really exclusive creatives and designers to create a handful of placards was because, again, it comes back to community. Everyone should have the right to be able to get involved. If you're not a creative person who can't make something eye-catching, then why shouldn't you be able to be involved and actually be able to download something that someone else has done? And the press we've actually got from it, the PR, where we've been like, you know, we've been featured in Design Week and Design, and It's Nice That, and Al Jazeera, and Art Digital Arts, all came off the back of just this one little idea we had when we were having a beer together at lunchtime. And it's turned into something that's not only strengthened our brand and our sort of our brand association, but it's also just been a really great thing to work on. I spent 6 years in design agencies trying to get the level of press for projects that we've received at a company which isn't a design company. So it works in the creative, obviously the creative like industry, but it's not fundamentally a product facing design company which delivers campaigns. So I just found the whole thing kind of ironic, to be honest. It was just kind of strange, like quite polarizing for myself as a creative to move into a non-traditional design agency as a content strategist and then suddenly get the most exposure I've ever had in my life to actually media outlets.
Yeah, it must be quite a gratifying feeling, though, at the same time, that you were able to make something that had an impact.
Exactly, but also it comes back to the idea of community, and it's why it's so important that people get involved in community projects for selfless reasons. No one who's ever, you know, won an award or been given an interview or been given an article or whatever usually approaches something with that being their end goal. They create good work because they care about it and they care about how it's engaged with by the people they're designing for, and it just so happens that that's what gets them noticed. So I think this is why it's just, like I said just then, it's important to engage with communities around the world and from a micro to a macro level, because sometimes if you just do it for selfless reasons because you want to help people, that's where you're going to get noticed and what's actually going to help you the most as a creative.
Yeah, and that definitely helps advance your career, not just in terms of getting more work in, but also as a creative person. You develop as a creative person because you've made something selflessly, you've done something with a good cause in mind, and people remember that shit. There are things
that's just it.
Yeah.
I mean, I was reading a really interesting book lately, and one of the workshops they recommended doing for everyone is to write your obituary. So actually like write how you'd want to be remembered if you died. And that gives you a really good idea of how you should position yourself as an individual, as a brand, because it makes you think about like, oh, if I had my own design agency, for instance, would I want to have, when I, in 40 years time, if I died, would I then want to be remembered for having multiple design agencies? Would I want to be remembered as an individual of someone who spent all their time trying to educate and help and start and like, you know, release products or like campaigns or et cetera for the greater good? So I would say it's definitely a really good thing to engage in as actually just an exercise to actually write your obituary of like how you'd want to be remembered in 40 to 50 years if you died, because I think it really gives you a clear insight into who you want to be at this point. Anyway, at this point, at this stage of your life, who you actually want to be.
It's a little bit of a dark exercise, but as a thought exercise, I think that's really powerful.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously you're writing your death note, so to speak. but it's like, I think it's that thing. It's if it's only by, I guess, trying to bring clarity into how you want to be remembered, which actually helps you sort of define who you are at this point in time and who you actually might want to be over the next few years of your life. Because I'm a very radically different person to who I was when I was 20 or 21. My views are very different on multiple things. But I think if you can do an exercise like that, which helps you kind of have clarity over who you might want to be, you can then start to put that into action. Because if you want to be someone who's remembered for doing good and actually, you know, maybe running classes or like trying to be involved in education, it makes no sense for you to then just work in a really privatized, you know, area of the industry for like an oil company as a designer, so to speak.
Yeah, exactly. So moving and kind of looking towards the future of community and things like that, something I wanted to ask you about was because I've recently quit using Facebook.
I noticed. Yeah, I saw your little, you last thing.
Yeah, I realized that I hadn't actually made a Facebook post in over a year. So I was like, and then before that, it was another year. And so I was posting like once a year. And it was like,
yeah,
I was checking this site almost every single day, just kind of on instinct. And I was part of all these design groups, part of a bunch of different other groups as well. And the same crap just came up every single day. And it was, especially when you have massive groups, especially ones that aren't curated for their posts and things like that, the same things would come up over and over and over again. Everything could largely be solved with a Google search, and it became very frustrating.
So yes. Yeah.
And it became so frustrating that I actually was getting annoyed by people wanting to ask questions, because it just became so oversaturated, and it felt very much like, why am I doing this? Like, why am I checking these things? They're not actually bringing any value to my career and the people I've met in those places. I don't even talk to them on Facebook. I talk to them in other sites or via email. It's like, why am I here? And I'm noticing over the last few years, a lot more people feel very similar to this, in that maybe it's just the Facebook platform, but there are lots more communities popping up in more of a private sense in recent years. So things like Slack things like Telegram, Discord,
we use Discord for we use Discord for Weekly Design and Uprising.
Yeah, I love Discord. I'm very much strongly considering setting up one for my own audience, but there's a lot more privacy with those. They feel a lot more that you have a lot more control. There's a lot more admin options, and people can talk more freely because there are things like voice channels and video channels as well where people can engage. And do you think that, because firstly, I see Discord and Slack as more like a forum. I see them less like a Facebook platform with a feed. Although there are feed and chat channels and Discord and Slack, they feel much more like a forum did in 2005.
Yeah.
And do you think that we're kind of heading towards that? Where do you see the future of online communities heading now, obviously, you've been part of them for so long?
I think, fundamentally, it's interesting because I definitely see there being a huge push towards actually smaller communities that have more maybe concentrated value. So that's not to say that the community itself won't be large, but it would just maybe have subgroups and sub-pockets, which is why a group like Slack or like a channel like Slack or Discord, for instance, actually can be much more valuable because you can have a designated group just about logo design or just about, you know, animation, etc. And while you can have a general, like, you know, an entire overview thing, which might be loads of different people, I definitely see there's been quite a lot of watering down of the actual quality of content within groups. I mean, I've noticed, it's interesting actually, because since when I was actually in the Designers League, because you're kind of embedded in that, you only really ever noticed the really great quality posts or the really, really, really shockingly bad quality posts. And you don't really see much in the middle ground. So when we actually left and I started viewing the Designers League much more from an outsider perspective, you kind of realize that when you can grow these sort of communities, but they can create very toxic areas of them, which isn't necessarily the fault of anyone. It's just it takes a lot of work to manage a large community, especially on something like a Facebook group. And it's very easy then to not be able to give that the group the attention it needs to be able to deliver, kind of, you know, keep that quality there and keep everything sort of really working properly. So I can definitely see there being a big movement at the moment towards these smaller communities being built on platforms that are maybe just better suited for what their needs are, that can allow for very different places of discussion in different channels. So it doesn't all just get bombarded into one place. It can actually just be like segmented, which makes it actually more digestible. And I think it's actually more, it suits how people live their daily lives more. They don't often want to be like just bombarded with content constantly. They'd like, they want to pick and choose what content they engage with at any time. And I think that's where something like Slack or Discord could come in handy, because it allows the actual user to have a bit more autonomy over what content they're engaging with, which for me is actually quite important. Allowing, not just going to people, oh, you have to look at this because you're in a, you know, a 20,000 person Facebook group or whatever, and this is basically just all feeds into the timeline. You can then be like, oh, well, I actually just want to ask a question specifically about logo design for people who actually do logo design. And that's, like I said, that's where having different channels can come in handy. So there's definitely a move more towards like that, those type of online agile communities, I'd say, rather than it just being sort of monolithic and having everything based in a singular place. It's funny though, because brands won't be doing that for a long time. It took brands about 5 years to realize the value of Facebook groups. So I don't see any big brands actually suddenly realizing, oh, you've got something like, you know, Discord, and we could actually utilize that in a really effective way. Not maybe in the tech industry, but I don't see any, like, you know, like retail brands really noticing that for a while still.
Yeah, I agree. I think big business won't catch on at all, but there are people I see popping up every so often who are usually from Eastern European design communities and Russian design communities who talk a lot about Telegram and having a community on Telegram of 25,000 people. And that's a almost exclusively mobile platform that is very agile, that they can use in a way like Facebook, where they broadcast, but they also have a community-driven chat and things like that. And I agree with you. I think that over time, people want quality over quantity. And with Facebook and other feed-based sites where you just get served up whatever the site thinks is good for you, or wants to show you, or you'll interact with, which is the thing I think I noticed the most, is that I would start to see more content and I felt myself getting stressed out because it was showing me content that it knew I'd react to, rather than me being able to actively seek out something or engage with something that was higher quality or even just more focused to what I'm trying to look for.
I think that's a fear. It's like a really good example of actually two, in my opinion, two platforms that do it quite well. You've got Medium and then you've got Twitch, and they're not the most go-to ones, but they fundamentally are about allowing, like, Twitch is great because it actually has really strong communities within Twitch, but it allows you to be very specific about the type of content you want to engage in. And while it's a streaming platform, you still have much more control than you do over something like Facebook and Medium as well. From a writing standpoint, you can search out like genres and specific sections that you just want to engage in. But I think like the whole Facebook thing is a little dated now. They've moved their mission statement, I think, was it this year or the end of last year, to be about empowering communities around the world, giving like admins a lot more control. Like, you know, group analytics sort of got much better. A lot more features came in for group admins to utilize to be able to sort of track their audiences and actually see what was going on. But the timeline feature has been a ongoing ongoing debate between designers for since it was conception. I mean, Facebook is a really ugly platform. Its UI isn't very good, and I think the idea of just throwing loads of stuff into a timeline sort of buys almost into that clickbait culture of like, oh, that looks kind of interesting, let's just go on that. But it's not necessarily, it's not really giving you autonomy. It's just kind of guising autonomy in a masquerade, so to speak, because it's sort of just going, oh, it's guising a masquerade in a kind of, in feeling like you have some kind of self-autonomy over what you're engaging with. Because you don't. It's all just done through algorithms, and it's just done through clickbait, and it's just done through like who you happen to be friends with. Yeah. So I think the more social channels and like that allow for these communities to be built, sort of realize the power of autonomy for the individual user, the better content and quality they'll get, and the more sort of audience they'll actually generate, because people just want to feel like they're in control. And I think if you give people that feeling, it'll build brand loyalty, and it'll make them engage with it and with the platform in a very new way, which would be interesting to see.
Yeah, and I'm excited to see where this goes, because I think teams and groups of people like yourselves at Uprising have the right mentality, which is that we're going to build a community, but we're also going to create something for them. It's not just going to be a space where people can talk all the time and just throw basically word vomit into the group and get reactions. There's actually going to be some substance there, whether that is courses or evergreen content, or I know some communities do like weekly contests and stuff like that too, to actually get people involved. So it's such a strange way to think about this, but it feels more like a community center that I would have gone to when I was like 12 on a Wednesday night, that and done that kind of thing.
I think it's been up with that, like Uprising fundamentally came at the back of 4 to 5 years of doing stuff with Designers League and realizing what wasn't working and what kind of does work. We're, like I said, we're still very early days, and we're trying to sort of generate that balance again of like trying to get out content, even on the Instagram. We're a small team, and a few of us go on holiday, it makes it very difficult to kind of keep writing the briefs and keep getting, you know, content out there. But fundamentally, the whole point of Uprising was a look at the culture of the industry, rather than like what Designers League necessarily was, which is allowing a space for people to engage in. Uprising was much more about looking at the issues within the culture of the industry and then developing product which could help and act as a sort of solution to issues within the culture and the problems that maybe creators find in their daily lives. So because of that, we might find that we don't need to necessarily have like we have a Discord channel which people can actually join, but we may find that that's not a fundamental USP of what the brand will turn out, because I think I personally found for Designers League is that if you do grow a community quickly, or it does expand to a certain point, it becomes very, very hard to manage the quality of that content. And for me, I just want to make sure that what we're doing at Uprising always has that quality engagement, and it isn't just trying to grow for the sake of growing, which I think a lot of early Facebook groups really fixated on, was, you know, getting those numbers in there, etc.
Yeah, and it's paid off for them, because now Facebook's brought in all these admin controls and you can subscribe to groups and pay money for things. It's paid off for them to an extent. But you're right, in the end, the ones that will last and the ones that will be have the strongest brand are going to be the ones who are doing the focus you have, which is going for quality and actually building something that people want to check in on every day rather than feeling like they have to check in on every day.
It's brand building. It's like you could have a 30,000, so you could have a 30,000 strong design community on Facebook, like the Design Tips Lounge or something like that. But if the quality is not there, if you release like a pay for option, would people actually engage with it? Like, you might have the audience, but people tend to want to engage with things that add value to their lives. And if you grow too quickly and it becomes, there's a bit of toxicity, or there's not maybe the value that was presented earlier on, you've kind of got to be aware of the engagement of a community and how much it actually might. So we were actually going to trial the sort of paid for option with Designers League. Got a huge backlash because obviously people either didn't feel like the content was worth paying for, or we developed a culture where people just felt that it shouldn't be a paid for option. So we scrapped it and we actually took that feedback on board and didn't do anything with it. But I definitely think, I guess it's that idea, like, would you rather try and hit something with a scatter gun or a sniper rifle?
Yeah.
And that idea of like, would you rather generate a community, which is a sniper rifle that really fires out good content consistently, people find a lot of value in, that if you released a paid for project that 80 to 90% of that audience would actually maybe engage in, or would you rather just be a scattergun that fires out multiple types of content, multiple types of ideas, and then maybe 20% or 10% of those things hit? And that just comes down obviously to who you actually want to be as a brand as well, because you might get a slightly more engagement on average if you have like a much larger community. But I don't think a lot of people want, especially creatives, don't really want to be associated with a bad product.
Yeah, exactly. And ultimately, that leads to a poor reputation, which then spreads like wildfire. So,
yeah, and the industry isn't that big, especially the creative industries. They're not that big. Everyone knows everyone. Like, if you get a bad reputation, it's just bad. And that is why this actually goes nicely back to what we were saying about the idea of like getting involved in communities in a selfless, positive way. The industry is small. If you're seen to be getting involved with things selflessly because you care, because it interests you, because you're passionate, that spreads and people know people. And if you're a young designer and you want to make connections, don't necessarily think you just have to do that through trying to do paid projects or trying to like bombard agencies to get involved with them. Sometimes you can just get involved with something that involves those agencies but doesn't have much money behind it. And that can actually introduce you to people you may never meet in your career.
Excellent. Well, Ben, thank you so much for coming on today's podcast and sharing what's going on with Uprising and all of the community-focused stuff you are working on. So what is next for Uprising? What's coming up? Is there anything in the pipeline that you can talk about now?
So currently we're doing a whole kind of, it's not a rebrand, it's basically a change in the sort of brand aesthetic, I'd say. We're kind of going to redo the weekly design site to kind of be and the Uprising site to just be more unified. We're going for a house of brands approach, but we want sort of like a unified look between the channels. So we're currently developing that. We're developing out this whole new section of the weekly design website, which is obviously the evergreen content and like the resources library. We're just getting off the ground with our Instagram, which is a bit of a lull for the last week or so because I was on holiday and we've had so much work on, but that's like steadily getting there. Jobs for Designers we're going to pull that from being live and actually, like I said, try and reposition it from a more of a cultural standpoint and like the standpoint from industry culture. And then look at getting that out sort of first quarter maybe of 2020. We've got a podcast in the works, which I'm sure you'll be delighted to hear, but we're not going to be focusing on that until kind of the fourth quarter of this year, first quarter of next year. For now, we're really trying to focus a lot of attention on weekly design and getting that product kind of correct. I think one of the problems we've had in the past is, especially at the Designers League, we focus on too many things at once and you kind of lose the quality. So for us, it's about being methodical and making sure we get one thing right and in a good place, and then we'll move on to developing the next and so on in that sense. So yeah, that's what we've got going on. Obviously, if people do want to check anything out, they can go to uprising.design. That has all of our products on. It has our contact details. If people want to reach out to any of us, please do. We love talking to creatives in the industry and just finding out more about them. And if you want to sign up to weekly.design, it's weekly.design. That's their website. And then you can just put your email into it and you'll get sent a weekly brief, which is industry standard with no fluff and will help you become a better designer.
Excellent. I was going to ask you where people can find you on the internet, but you've done it already. So
I thought I'd save you the air. Save the oxygen.
But no, people listening at home and guys listening at home, I would strongly recommend, even if you don't do every brief that comes through from Weekly Design, just go and take a look at it, get a couple of them in your inbox. And when you're sat trying to think of a brief to do for your own personal stuff or to try and learn something new and you need a brief for it, you will be very, very glad to have those in your inbox. So say that was weekly.design. Go, all the links are going to be down in the description for today's show. And Ben, again, thank you very much for coming on the show. It's been great talking to you.
Yeah, thank you very much for inviting me, dude. It's been a really nice conversation.
Excellent. So guys, thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Fowler Hour. If you've enjoyed it today and are listening to us on Apple Podcasts or anything related to Apple, iTunes, who doesn't, no one uses iTunes anymore, do they? But go and leave us a 5-star review, leave us a nice comment about it, and I'll read them out on the next solo episode of The Fowler Hour. We'll be back same time next week, every Thursday, and you can come and join us then. Bye for now. See you in a bit.